Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today, I'm chatting with Alex Ware, Creative Director at Ware Stewart. We talk about keeping ahead of design trends without being trendy, adding objectivity into a subjective field so you don't fall back on your personal preferences, how Ware Stewart determines the type of work they will take on versus being an agency that tries to do everything, and more, all right after this. It's no secret that I love Jack Prince. They're a longtime sponsor of the podcast and Creative South. Plus, they do great work. Whether they're making our pop-up displays and tablecloths or printing notebooks, Jack Prince is always there when we need them. This year, they are printing new Creative South t-shirts for me and the podcast stickers that have a coupon code on the back that gives you a great discount on all of their products just in time for Creative South. Speaking of stickers, Jack Prince will print any kind, shape, size, or stock, including full-color stickers with full-color liner prints for you to use as product labels, promotions, bumper stickers, hang tags, business cards, and more. Right now, you can get 500 3x3-inch die-cut stickers starting at $149. Plus, Jack Prince is giving Creative South Podcast listeners 15% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code SOUTH15OFF at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. The Columbus, Georgia Convention and Visitors Bureau is pleased to welcome you to Creative South 2018. We're proud to be a key event sponsor and hope you'll explore our city and see what makes Columbus such a unique and creative destination. While you're here, we want you to feel at home, so stop by our visitor center at the corner of 9th Street and Front Avenue until 5 p.m. each day. Or visit the Recombobulation Station, located at the lobby of the Springer Theater, and stock up on life's little necessities. If you like the Creative South Podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. With options starting at just $1 per month, you can help support the podcast and even wind up with some cool Creative South Podcast swag. When you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, a shout out on the podcast thanking you for your support, Creative South Podcast stickers and t-shirts. So, please help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. Alex, thanks for joining me tonight.
I'm happy to, man. Thanks for having me.
So, not that people are going to be able to see this, but I think we have to talk about the wonderful beer glass you are drinking out of and just the level of Florida-ness.
It is. Apologies to anyone from Florida, but this is what we would refer to as a Floridian lack of class. I'm drinking a January 2018 Hooters mug, or Hooters. Actually, this is like a Hooters pint glass shaped like a Hooters waitress. Appears to be hand painted, and with the quality craftsmanship involved in this, I'm really kind of astonished that I was able to purchase this item for about $7 full of beer.
it's high quality.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. There's an amazing backstory to this, but when I saw it, I knew I had to have it. And, I had to bring one and give it to the Hood Sisters at Creative
they
South.
Would, I'm sure they would find it hilarious.
I think they would.
I wonder if
done.
You can get them at all Hooters, or if it's just the ones in Florida.
I don't know. That's a good question, because I would say, you know, this has to be a system-wide thing you can get, but it's hand-painted, so.
Yeah,
if you're doing it at all Hooters, will you sell a million of these things?
I don't know.
How can they meet demand?
Of kids in a sweat factory somewhere.
It is. Learning about the birds and the bees. At 8 exactly. In Taiwan.
Yeah, exactly. So kind of diving into things, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Augusta, Georgia, which is a great town. It's actually bouncing back. I have a friend who, a really good friend of mine, who we were in each other's weddings and we lived together in college, who mm-hmm. grew up in Columbus. And mm-hmm. And we refer to Columbus and Augusta as the bookends of Georgia because sure. they're very, very similar. You know, they both
and constantly battling for which is the second biggest city.
They are. That's right. Do we have the title back? Because when I heard y'all have the title, I was like, that's bullshit. There's no way.
I haven't cared enough to check. I'll be honest.
Both on a river, both hotter yep. than hell.
Yeah.
You know, both with a rebounding downtown and with a, pound for pound, a pretty strong art and music scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. So when you were growing up, what were you into? Were you sporty kid, arty kid, nerdy kid?
It's interesting. I wonder if it's like this for a lot of people from the South, because I was, I skated and stuff. And like, that was kind of my introduction to graphic design. It was like skate decks and stuff. Like I loved
sure.
that type of artwork. The Mike McGill deck, which I have one of them in the office, was kind of like the thing, I think, from a design standpoint, that really just got me into design. Mm-hmm. But I'm also from a family where my dad's side is from 96 South Carolina, and my grandfather and my uncles and stuff raised bird dogs. So we always had like a very, I think interestingly balanced thing where you would go hunting all the time, but you mm-hmm. would also, had this interest in art and stuff. So Alan, did you have a similar experience?
I don't. I kind of grew up all over the place. My dad, liked sports. He's a mechanical engineer, so while he was artistic when he was younger, he kind of went a different direction. But he wasn't really outdoorsy. I mean, we went camping and stuff, but like looking back on it, we went camping because, that was the affordable vacation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the kind of thing with us. It's like outdoorsy wasn't a choice.
Yeah.
You know, that's just what you did when you were 8 years old and you got taken dove hunting or whatever. And my uncle lived in Estill, South Carolina.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Estill is.
Yeah. Estill's a tiny little place. But
yeah,
I mean, he was my dad's brother. And so a lot of time was spent, going to those places. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, we had like a Thanksgiving once, like on the Savannah River, where my great uncle got bitten by an alligator.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I mean, it was just that was sort of the thing. So, it's kind of interesting is how people. Most of the people I know that are big into hunting do it as a hobby, and mm-hmm. and we just like that's what you did, so that was yeah. just sort of a baseline thing,
yeah.
And so art and all that was very, very different for me because that's not what anybody else in the family at least was doing, really.
Sure. Sure. When you were going through school, what type of classes were you taking at the time? What were your electives focusing on?
Like in college? In high
school? Yeah, well, starting off in high school, because you've got all those electives, you can, take shop or home ec or
yeah, well, art I went to Richmond Academy, which is, don't let the name fool you. It's not private. You know it, right?
I do. Yeah, I know it well.
So you're in general population in that school for a long time. But there were teachers that were influential, but really when you got to college, like, you just talk about what your background sets you up for. My dad was a doctor. So when I went to Georgia, I was pre-med until mm-hmm. I back-to-back 52s on my first two chemistry exams. And then I thought, well, maybe I'm not that good at math. Maybe medicine is not for me. So after that, and I went to school in Athens at Georgia, and uh-huh. I was I was an art major for a little while, but I'm not very good at not a very good like fine artist, like a technical artist, which
sure.
is why graphic design was great because of the technology involved. It kind of lets you express yourself where you can't just by hand.
But yeah, no, that's the exact same way I was. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's great. And so I was art for a minute, and then I finally ended up being an English major. So I graduated with a degree in English from Georgia. I translated Beowulf, which, you know, just day to day serves me so extraordinarily
so much
in all my business and social pursuits.
I mean, did you voluntarily, like, did you take this assignment on yourself, or was this
you have to take, like, if you're an English major, which is basically math avoidance, you know,
you have
to take a certain amount of, I think in Georgia it's like pre-1800 classes, mm-hmm. and then like post-1800. So post-800 is like, you know, you're reading Hemingway and modern poets and stuff. But then the pre stuff is like, once you wear out all the Shakespeare, you've read taking a class on the Iliad and the Odyssey, you got some choices to make. And so the choice I took was actually the guy who taught Old English in Georgia, uh-huh. Was the harmonica player in an Athens band called the Vigilantes of Soul.
And
they were kind of a cool band, right?
Yeah.
So Vigilantes of Soul guy was taught the class, and apparently he was like the foremost Old English guy in the world, which Old English is nothing like the Chaucer. Like, it kind of sounds like English. Like, it sounds nothing like English.
No.
So you take this one intro to class, and then the second class, because you might as well, and you got one more credit to fill, is translating the entire damn thing, you know, like 15 lines at a time or whatever over the course of the class. So
that's so I gotta ask
not because of a thirst to understand the intricacies of Beowulf. But
I gotta ask, is Beowulf, once it's translated, actually pretty good? Because I could not get through the just painful trying to read and decipher what I was reading.
The story?
The
story's ridiculous. I mean, the story's basically like a big bragging contest between a bunch of bros, and then it turns into, you know, killing some monsters. I mean, it's cool, but it's hard to get to the part that's actually, it's not like any good, like, modern lit where it's like a metaphor of anything. It's just one of those old, like, stories where, you know, the town was in peril and somebody was killing everybody, and then Jason Frostholm came along and he slayed all of the people that were oppressing everyone, and they made him king, and then he got cocky and a dragon ate him. That's basically it.
Yeah. So
that's Beowulf in 8 seconds or whatever that took.
Gotcha.
but a classic.
Yes. I remember having to read it in college, and I think it was English 2. We had to read that. Of course, Chaucer. And then we skipped.
Chaucer's just like fart jokes.
Yeah. Chaucer's exactly. some Jonathan Swift. And of course it wasn't Gulliver's Travels. It was, you know, something else. And then Ulysses by James Joyce.
Yes.
And I dropped the class halfway through Ulysses. And it was like, I will wait and go somewhere else.
By the time I got in Beowulf, I had to have it. You know what I mean? I had to have it. Or I was going to be there another quarter.
So. Yeah. So you wrap up this English degree. What do you start doing? Because there's, you know, people who are straight English majors, there's not a ton of jobs out there for you.
No. It's kind of a do nothing or anything degree. I mean, you know, looking back on it, especially now, at least it kind of teaches you to write. So,
sure.
I mean, just to communicate. Because like in the course of, you know, what we've been doing, I've had some things where, you know, the CEO, who's some ballin' ass guy that makes $1 billion, you know, has to write something for something that we're laying out. And you're like, God, this guy can't even, you know, the guy can't write. So, I mean, it was good from a communication standpoint and how to do it. But the first thing I did out of college was I got an internship, at a tiny little ad agency in Atlanta called Creative Wizards, which if you have creative in your name,
if you've got Wizards in your name, I mean,
Wizards, you know, probably means that you're not from an ad agency standpoint. But yeah, I feel like
they had to have a panel van somewhere in their past that had, you know, the wizard and the bear.
It was an interesting place.
Yeah,
I actually one of the first things I ever designed was a business card for that. I can't believe I'm telling you this. And I illustrated like a wizard peering into a crystal ball. It was the most cliched, just awful thing.
Of course.
But it was a decent illustration for me.
Well, that's good. Yeah.
You know, but I mean, people that can actually draw would think it was terrible. But point being, I got a job at this place, and because it was a small place, they had like, you know, they were doing really well for a while when I was there, and so I had to pick up some of the design stuff. But because I, you know, all my life I'd been interested in design,
sure,
I'd taken some art classes, understood things about composition, and I kind of, you know, overwhelmed what Quark could do from a design standpoint, and I kind of designed some things, and that's where I kind of got into like design, which is, it just sounds ridiculous. I mean, my path to design is through the most basic, like, sort of ridiculous stuff. I feel like most people these days, you can go on the internet and you have all these great references and you have these great programs and you have this great
show. Sure.
And more than anything, you get shown like, this is good. Mm. You know, like everyone at Creative South, speakers and things you can look at and say, okay, well, this is what good design is. But in 1997 or whenever I was doing it, when we still had to like have zip drives and,
yeah,
write reading E down negatives of ads we sent to people and like take them film, you just kind of did your own thing. And so I would make ads out of circles and squares and diamonds or whatever the three basic shapes Quark could make and kind of be like, oh man, this is awesome. So, you know, once I got into design there, like the first time I saw communication arts, because this is none of the stuff was on my radar.
Sure.
I don't even know if Print and Howe were around back then. I'm sure they were. But the first
they were around back then.
Yeah, but the first time I saw something like Communication Arts or Lutzer's, or however you say it, archive, I was like, oh my God, I suck. Yeah, it was just like,
I still look at them today and do that.
It's
so
just the most humbling thing. It was terrible. And so, you know, one of the things was just, it was unbelievable when, you know, I finally got published in something like that, you know, or working with Daniel, we got published in something like that, because at that time, and here's a message to everybody that, you know, is listening isn't there yet or is coming to Creative South, is like, I didn't think there was any chance in hell that I would ever be in something like that. You know,
yeah,
at the point that I've, you know, realized that I kind of loved what design was about, I was like, I am so far from any of the stuff that is good that I'm never, ever going to get there. And so, you know, loving and following and getting there was just, man, it's kind of amazing. I don't really think about that much, but it was cool. But I do remember we had the first time that we got, like, to your point, what you're saying about being humbled by that stuff, is we had a bunch of stuff, I don't know, maybe 8 years ago in the regional design annual. Whoever one of the judges was just loved all the shit we did for the South and was like, they love all the stuff. And so they send you this questionnaire and they say, like, you know, what do you think the tropes are? What do you want to see go away? What do you want to see stay? And the last question was like, well, what do you think about print? And our answer to that was like, we hate it, you know, because every time we look at it, we realize how far away we are from actually being good.
Yeah, I know that feeling well. So you're at Creative Wizard. Yes. How long do you stay? Oh, I'm sorry. There yeah, Creative more than, Wizards. More than one. Plural Wizards. Ah, that makes it even better.
Jason, it was super collaborative. It was like, for what it was actually great. You know, I mean, for the kind of things that people do, it was, you know, it was a guy who I admire a ton and a woman, and they were just, they made it out of nothing, mm-hmm. you know, and they had some cool stuff going on. I was glad to be there, but needless to say, not hyper sophisticated in terms of design.
Sure. So how long do you stay there?
I stayed there maybe 4 years, something okay. like that.
And, that's a while.
Yeah, it was a while. But I mean, it was a really cool culture too. And you just love these. It was, you know, it's the first job I got out of college. Uh-huh. Like I said, the guy who owned it was super cool. And, you know, so you really would, you know, you'd do anything for them. And, mm-hmm. And then I got laid off because they basically had, you know, two massive clients.
I was about to say they had what, probably two or three big clients.
Two big clients. And it was like, and I remember talking to, you know, somebody and be like, and this is like riding a bicycle, you know, mm-hmm. and if one of these wheels falls off,
it's not a unicycle.
Yeah. No, it's not a unicycle. It's hard to balance one of those.
Yep.
So lost one, and when they lost one, I got cut, and that's, you know, that's fine. I should have been the person to get cut.
Sure.
But like right after I want to say 10 days after I got cut, the planes hit the towers.
Oh, geez.
And I was in Atlanta, Georgia at the time, because that's where I went to work. Cause mm-hmm. that's where the work was. And dude, it was, advertising was over. Like yeah. when that happened, and then the bubble burst on the housing and everything, it was just, there was everyone that wanted a job in advertising or design was in a stack of like 2,000 resumes. I think that year I had 6 W-2s because I went to Randstad. Mm-hmm. I licked envelopes at a church. I did all the chalk paintings on like a YMCA. I almost worked at Guitar Center because I was in a band at the time, but I couldn't do it because I went in there and I thought it was like an application process. And it's me and a dude in a black silk shirt with the flames halfway up it.
Of course.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought it'd be cool.
I'm like, sure he still works at Guitar Center.
He probably does. And I was like, I could just work at a Guitar Center because I like music. I could be around it. Mm-hmm. And this guy's in there. And the guy just comes in and he's like, he's just going to sign you up. And so he was like, oh, just give me your driver's license and, you know, you can start tomorrow. And I was like, oh, my God. So I said, I left mine out in my car. And he was like, all right, well, go get it. And I went out in my car and I just drove off. I never went back to the Guitar Center.
Man, it's harder to get a job at Subway.
I could have been managing by now at the Guitar Center.
This is true. This is true. Probably a lot less headaches.
Yes. So did that. I mean, had like 6 jobs and then had a couple where I was I freelanced from home. Mm-hmm. And then I worked for this publishing company, with these Dutch guys in Atlanta and downtown. I got fired for speaking a language I made up around them, which is kind of a long story. And
why?
Because these guys would speak Dutch around me, Jason.
Oh,
they would say like, blah, 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 Jason, blah, 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 Jason, in front of the room, and me and 2 other designers. And so I said, hey, guys.
I know you're talking about me.
Harlow and Gillis, like, I hear you talking about me. Like, just tell me.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, ah, well, don't, you know. And they wouldn't tell me what the hell they were saying. So my mother and her sister had this language they speak called alfalfa language, which is basically gibberish the sisters made up. Alpha and Ilfis, Alpha and Alpha, 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 kind of like Alpha and Jilfrit, right? That's what it sounds like. So I taught the other designers there how to speak it. And I said, the next time these Dutch guys come in, right, and they start speaking in a language we don't understand around us, we're going to speak in a language they don't understand around them. And so they did it. And I said, Theophilus Calphas, Arphal, Dolphal, Chalphas, Holphals. And they lost their minds. They immediately fired me. And they had like security escort me out.
Oh, wow. They went full.
They were super pissed off about it. I mean, they shouldn't have been that pissed off about it because it was funny. They're not exactly.
The Dutch are not known for their great sense of humor.
I don't know, but it was the first time I'd ever seen Red Bull, dude. This is like 19, maybe as early 2000s. But they had like a refrigerator solid Red Bull.
Sure.
Like I'd never seen it. I was like, what is this? They drink this shit like 5 times a day. What is it? And it was like, oh, energy drink. So anyway, they fired me. And so I went home and told my wife, you know, for the first time in 2 years that I'd been canned for like the 8th time. And I was like, I just want to go back to Augusta. I think we could get something there. So, and she was a very successful interior designer in Atlanta. So she gave up a lot to move out of there. But Atlanta at the same time, too, was getting like super congested where you couldn't go anywhere with anybody. It was just packed all the time. I had great friends that lived a mile and a half from me. You never saw them.
Yeah. Because it was just, takes 20 minutes to get there.
It's just dealing. So I got a job in Augusta as the marketing director. For those who can't see, I'm making air quotes, marketing director of there are two big independent real estate companies in Augusta. And they didn't know what I was. I had to wear a tie all the time. And
which one was it?
This was Maybaum.
Oh, okay.
This is the first time they had hired anyone in marketing. And this kind of blew my mind too. So I'd never been, and I didn't know what Addies were, you know, like the advertising awards. So the first year I was only with them like a year. But we had the first Addies and I won a gold Addy.
Oh, wow.
And I thought that I had, I mean.
You were hot shit.
Yeah, hell yeah. I thought it was like Kanye. I was like, yeah. I mean, I thought that was the shit. It was fucking crazy. My wife was like super proud of me and everybody just couldn't believe it. You know, and I went back to him. I was like, gold Addy. And they were like.
Get back to work.
So, I mean, I didn't really care.
Yeah.
And so the other independent, which was Blanchard and Calhoun, approached me about doing the same thing for them. And I was like, I would rather slip my wrists, but I could sign you guys on as a client, you know, and that would give me enough of a base to at least start my own thing. So that's what I did. And I probably made $24,000 that year. But it was enough, you know?
Yeah.
And I could kind of call my own shots, which was great. And the other thing too is like because I was an English major, and I'd learned design, like this whole thing, right? So the whole time, the thing that was great about that stint at Creative Wizards is I taught myself how to design. And at one point when they were pretty hot, they had a kid who was a graduate of Portfolio Center. I think he was an intern at the time. He worked at Attic in San Francisco. You know that firm?
Yeah, yeah.
His name was Alex McCracken, and he was just a badass. And I feel like I've never been the best designer anywhere I've ever been.
Sure.
So all I would do is sit there and be like, why'd you do that? Or how did you do that? You know, why did you do that? Why did you do that? To try to understand, like, you know, what makes things look a certain way because of typography or composition and things like that. So that was a very good little base learning experience for me to, you know, watch somebody who was actually good, who was, by the way, was younger than me at the time, and kind of learn. So when I started my own thing, and what one of my problems was when I was leaving Atlanta is I would go, you know, I would apply for a job somewhere and the creative director would be like, well, you can't be a copywriter and a designer.
That's not allowed.
You have to be one of the two. And I was like, I'm both. Like Deion Sanders. Do you remember that ad when he did the Domino's Pizza ad? And Jerry Jones is like, what's it going to be, Deion? $15, $20 million? And he says, both. Does he got paid $35 million to the Cowboys?
Yeah.
It was like that. Me and Deion.
Exact same thing. So at what point do you and Daniel hook up and start working together?
So he's, you know, Daniel's like 8 years younger than me, like 8 and a half, something like that, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I had gone out on my own by this time, like I was telling you, with that other kind of the real estate company is sort of my, you know, security that I won't starve. I actually did that too when my wife was pregnant. I think my wife was pregnant with our second kid. We only have two, and my mm-hmm. first kid was one, which is really ballsy and badass of my wife, because she was like, do it, you know. But it was super risky. It was mm-hmm. risky as fuck. But anyway, so I, you know, in like local Addies and stuff around Augusta, like I was doing pretty good. And then Daniel, you know, showed up, and he was, I think he started as an intern at this other little this design firm in Augusta, which was, you know, a good established design firm, and he did mm-hmm. good stuff. And so in the next couple of years, like, he clipped me a few times. But I loved his style. And so we started talking, and we just had very similar philosophies on like kind of what we wanted to get done.
Sure.
You know? And so we're basically, you know, we're sharing about 90% of the same DNA. And then there's 10% of stuff that I'm better at and 10% of stuff that he is better at. Mm-hmm. But we talked for like a year, before we decided to do it. And then we decided to do it. And when we got together, I think I'd saved up some type of money that I thought was going to be good enough. And that at the time was like maybe $5,000. And then we immediately just bottomed out.
Nosedived. Yeah.
Yeah. Nosedived to like nothing. But fortunately we're able to pull it out, and it's been great. I don't know how, you know, there are two kind of things on this. I mean, one, there's the business aspect of it, but two, there's also the design thing. Is if, you know, it's, if you don't have somebody else, you know, and this was the hard part of not having a partner when I was, cause I was solo for 2 or 3 years, maybe.
Sure.
But if you don't have mentorship, or you don't have a community of people, mm-hmm. there was no Dribbble back then where you could post something and somebody would be like, you know, that sucks, or, you know, make it yellow, or help you improve it. Uh-huh. You know, it's very hard. I found, at least, to kind of improve in a vacuum.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it's still hard to do that. And it's, even with all those tools, you know, there's no substitute for being in the room with somebody else to be able to build those skills up.
Yeah. And that's why now everyone is in the same room where we work in this kind of grand sociological experiment. But, you know, it's good. I mean, that's like the thing about Creative South and everything is so great, is so many different people, so many different styles and all that sort of stuff. And uh-huh. getting to, you know, kind of use everybody's influence to, you know, not only make your own stuff better, but kind of define where you need to be.
Definitely. Definitely.
Because of seats that are taken.
Yeah.
You know, there are some people that got certain things and you need not even worry about doing those.
Yeah. That's why I don't ever even try to venture into Nick Slater territory.
No, I'm just that, you know, yeah, there are things that, like, Nick and Draplin and Hood Sisters, mm-hmm. and I mean, there are people that have a style, you know, And
yeah,
listen, you know, bite certain things of them because we're graphic designers. We're not artists.
No.
You know, but some people just create things and own them so thoroughly that you would just never do it. You know, mm-hmm. Kendrick and Halftone Deaf. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that people do that's great.
Yeah. So you and Daniel partner up. Things you immediately blow through all your money.
Yeah.
You know, how do you start defining roles of who's going to do what?
Well, you know, for a long time, we did the same. You know, if you're talking from like a business standpoint, mm-hmm. you have this very rudimentary idea of like, oh, well, Jason, you know, I'm going to pay Jason and I'm going to pay, you know, or me, I get paid, you know, I'm getting $3,000 a month. Well, if I can do a logo for $2,500, if I can do two of those in a month, we made $2,000, you know, but then you have to do all the other shit. So you don't realize that like someone that can do books, you know, or someone that can do other things like has value because all your, you know, in your naivety, you're just like, well, I can equate this directly to this person and that's how you do it. And mm-hmm. so we grew out of necessity because people just wanted us to do stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had a very early on had a conversation with one of the guys from the second place I worked on their commercial division, like the people that allowed me to start my deal. Mm-hmm. They got jets, right? So mm-hmm. in a jet with a guy, and I'm like, what do I do to get the jet? And he was like, you just need to keep your head down and just keep digging. And I was like, all right, you know, you just work and you just try to do the best work you can. Cause I think his message was, there's no little shortcut to it. And you do that, but through doing that, you create, you know, more demand for it. And then, so you know, we kind of got forced to grow.
Sure.
If that answers your question.
Yeah. At what point do you start realizing that the two of you can't do it alone and you have to start bringing in other, you know, other business minded people and other creative minded people?
You know, and what's different from today is that when we were working till, you know, 11 or 12 at night, three times during the week, and then working on the weekends all the time, mm-hmm. you know, and wives are getting pissed off and, you know, and birthdays are getting missed and stuff like that. And so you think, yeah, you don't ever think about like, at least I never thought about like, okay, well, it's just in, you know, in 5 years, it'll be this person and this person. You just, were super reactive and so kind of
sure
involved in what you were doing and trying to make it good that you didn't think about that stuff. And, you know, we also have always had a culture of kind of massively over delivering, you know, because you still can't, and I don't know if designers think this way, but you still can't believe if someone wants to pay you to do something that you actually like to do, that you can't believe the value in it. So you're like, oh my God, like the first time someone wanted to pay me $2,500 for a logo, it was like, I'm going to give them 40 pages of shit because, you know, cause it's just unbelievable they do it. But it
I've learned to temper that.
Oh, I know you have to, man. And it's hard.
Yeah,
there's still a bunch of stuff that's, you know, value based and hard to deal with, but it's just when you've got so much you can't do it, and when you start to not have the time to really make something, you know, what you want it to be, or to take that time mm-hmm. begins interrupting like your quality of life.
Sure,
because I don't know about you, but it's like there's something like you can't. A lot of times in design, there's just like, you can't make something half-assed, you know, like the mm-hmm. worst direction ever from a client would be like, you know, well, don't spend much time on it. Because you're like, I can't
I got one of those.
I can't not hand paint this Hooters glass.
Yeah,
I can't phone this in because someone's going to drink out of it, and it's awesome. You know,
Working in house, that is a huge challenge because I get those emails a lot,
Don't spend a lot of time on this. This is just a whatever, and you're like, oh my god, no.
Put some pride into what we're doing.
Yeah, I mean, we've even gotten into this thing now with some clients where if you get that, like, mm-hmm. you know, Jason just says, you know, make it a fucking square and put the logo in the middle and say, you know, thanks for supporting Creative South. Mm-hmm. And we're like, all right, we'll do that. That'll take 5 minutes. Right.
Yeah.
But then we're actually going to sit around and like try to conceptualize something. And we use that too, even though they didn't ask for it, you know. Even if it's a sketch, it's going to be like, well, what about this? You know, what if we did something like this? Just so that you don't get, you know, complacent and start to just take orders.
True. But then conversely, you get disappointed when the client is like, no, we just wanted you to put it in the box and send it back to us. This is too much.
Yeah. I mean, but that's a long, you know, that's a battle versus war thing.
Sure.
Where sometimes you can get them, but I have some weird chip on my shoulder about that kind of stuff.
You're not going to half-ass it.
And I would rather do the extra work than just, you know, be a bitch and be like,
okay, here you go.
Here's what you asked for.
Yeah. I'm the same way.
You wanted, you know,
I'm the same way.
Yeah. We're both Gen X, baby.
Yeah. Firmly in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, while you're growing things and picking up new clients and all this, you've expanded your staff, how are you learning to manage your staff and, you know, not micromanage them, but not give them so much slack that it, you know, takes forever to get stuff done and you know, all that fun stuff.
You know, that's one of the weird things too about what we do, right?
Sure.
Like you could definitely watch somebody sheetrock a place and be like, motherfucker, I know it only takes...
Yeah.
You know, I know it only takes a half day to sheetrock in the rest of this house, but when you do design and when you do conceptual stuff, I mean, sometimes it just doesn't show up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sometimes sometimes you have an idea that doesn't work out. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, how many times have you been thinking about a problem or something you had to do design wise and you're like, oh, okay, I know what this is. Mm-hmm. You know, I know what this needs to be and I know what this needs to look out. And you spend, you know, a day on it and you're like, damn, I was wrong. You know, this Hooters glass should not have been hand painted. I should have, you know, I should have just made it orange the whole way or whatever, you know? Uh-huh. So you have, And a lot of times, too, part of the creative process doesn't look like work.
Yeah.
You know, so really one of the hardest parts of managing that is having an atmosphere where there are non-creative people and creative people. Mm-hmm. And having, you know, the creative people understand that, like, we got to support the non-creative people because, you know, they're communicating with clients. They're guaranteeing things. We have to back them up. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't let them fail. But also at the other, you know, from the other side saying like, you know, you don't just, you know, you just don't come up with, you know, George, what's his face being the crispy kernel in 4 hours.
Yeah.
You know, what's his name? Hamilton. George. Yes. Hamilton. Have you seen that one?
Yes.
Oh my God. That was the best kernel, the crispy kernel.
Yep.
But you know, just because of how that stuff works. But mainly it's, you know, especially with designers, my thing is always, I want the rationale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you understand what something is supposed to be, and you show it to me, and I don't, you know, and my first look at it is like, well, that's not what I would have done. It's just never what you would have done. Mm-hmm. Everyone does something differently. But if you, you know, if I said, Jason, you know, what is this? And you said, oh, well, you know, the client said that, you know, they're approachable. And so because they're approachable, I've, you know, I've hand wrote all this type, you know, or I left the ends of this thing open or something to, you know, whatever the rationale is, if somebody can back it up and explain it,
mm-hmm.
then I trust the designer, you know, and I say, yeah. That may not be what I would do, but. You know, if you think that's the right thing to do, it's great. Because I've had some things, you know, had a lot of things I think are awesome. I've had some things that people have done that I've worked with that I didn't think at the time were necessarily super awesome, but they could back it up, you know, and mm-hmm. they had really solid reasoning for everything they did. And the client loved it. And in retrospect, it was just, you know, super badass.
Sure.
So, you know, when you work with other people, you got to say, you know, I trust you. Somebody wrote, I can't remember who it was, about it was something about the editor of the New York Times. And it was like, well, the editor of the New York Times is a better writer than everyone that he is receiving things from. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't have time to rewrite all that stuff, you know.
Yeah,
because he's managing like the volume of that. So he says, this is great. And you don't nitpick things and you let them go. That's not to say that I'm, you know, the editor of the New York Times, anything like that, you know, but the sure. point is, you know, people are confident in things and they do things well and you let them do it.
Gotcha. When you have new designers come on board, how do you teach them to defend their work and to create a rationale? Because that's not, I mean, there's still plenty of colleges out there and plenty of schools of thought out there that don't teach that. They just teach how to design and how to, they don't teach the critique portion of it.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing is being good at giving critique, you know.
Sure.
It's not helpful when someone just says, this sucks or I don't like it. You know, you have to have a way forward.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the way that I've always designed is I create parameters for myself, you know. So if, you know, one of the hardest things we ever did was like design the brand for Ware Stewart because it could be whatever we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you have to start making some rules. You got to start fencing it in so that you can look at, you know, the entire catalog of design and know that if it fits or not, you know?
Sure.
So if something's going to be, has to look young, or something needs to look approachable, or something needs to look fast,
mm-hmm.
you know, there are things that make things look that way. And so if you create the parameters around that, then you should be able to defend it. I mean, one of the things that I always thought was terrible, and I was guilty of this myself when I was younger, was like, this is awesome because I've never seen it. Yeah, this is groundbreaking shit because no one's ever, you know, made something clash this hard.
And that's how we get Papyrus and Comic Sans.
That's right. You know, and it's not because we're not doing anything. I don't believe that anyone in our area of things is doing anything that's completely original.
No.
You know, all of it is based on understanding of design and what makes things the way that they are, which is why I think like the greatest designers like understand that. Like, you know, a guy, Leonard, that works with me, Porkchop, who's also a visual artist. Yeah, but Leonard.
Yeah, he's been on the podcast.
Yeah. Oh, he has. That's right. But Leonard has, I talk about designers in terms of what I call their vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, so how big of a vocabulary does a designer have? Leonard has a massive vocabulary. And you can say, I want it to look like 1974 sports in Argentina, whatever, you know, and you can narrow all these things down to where you understand what that looks like. And then, and you know, it misses if it doesn't look like it. And a lot of this stuff is typography and composition and color and like all these things you understand. So getting a designer to defend their stuff, you know, in some point has in a very subjective art form. And I use the term art loosely that we have.
Sure.
There are some very objective things about it.
Yeah.
You know, there's some very objective things that make things look medical or make things look like beach or make things look like whatever.
Well, and that's why it's design and not art.
Yeah, that's right. And so understanding what those things are, you know, allows, and when people really, and so, so to me, like the best designers, like really understand like the tiniest little thing that makes something look like a shitty restaurant that's actually nice. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like Bros or some of the things that some other people, they just know how to thread that tiny little needle where that intersection of all these things happen, where it's nostalgic, but it's still kind of new, but it's still very, very much based in whatever it is they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's kind of like the, you know, solving like the Rubik's Cube of design is there's so many things, you have so many choices. You've got a billion fonts, a billion colors, all this kind of stuff. And you can just make the choices so much better than other people that you can really express something that it's like super resonant and not derivative, you know, cause it's really hard to not be derivative on that stuff.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it's, I mean, you know, when you're building these things, you know, kind of speaking on that line of being derivative and all, you know, how do you go about keeping up with trends but not being trendy?
I've gone back and forth on this a lot. Mm-hmm. Like I used to like not, and I still kind of don't like look at dribble. Like I've got, anyone that knows me will tell you that of sort of my issues with dribble. Because one, I think it hyper accelerates trends.
I agree with that.
I think Nick Slater and Jay Fletcher dropped some stuff on dribble, and then there's a ton of shit that looks exactly like it on dribble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the other thing that I don't really understand is like how that gets out to the public, because I know as super nerdy focused designers, they've got to be behind us, you know, by a couple of years. But In some aspects, I'm afraid to see a lot of that stuff because I'm afraid of its influence.
Sure.
Because you want to maintain some originality. But on the other side, you want to stay very relevant.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I will say on that stuff, I've always tried to incorporate some things that I like personally that have nothing to do with like how things are going.
Give me an example of that.
You know, I think a lot of stuff that's considered really good is too clean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is just, you know, with a lot of the monoweight stuff and a lot of just things that are so beautifully executed, you know, and for me, I like things that have some mistakes in them, you know, and have some depth and have some weird textures.
Look like they've been lived in.
Yeah. But I mean, but that's back from, you know, seeing things, from back in the day, like, you know, where people would like, you know, Xerox things and crumple them up and do them over again, or you would handwrite on stuff, or there's this intentional like all the stuff that I really saw that I liked back in the day in indie stuff was really analog.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And there's something that, you know, with everybody having access to all this, these, you know, badass machines that can make everything super pure and awesome, that, that some of that gets lost. You know, like there's all this, I mean, you'll see like, you know, like, so hand, like hand let, like some hand lettering or like painting things come in. Well, then there's a million typefaces that you can get on, you know, creative, whatever that look like somebody actually drew them. But I don't think any of those things are substitute for actually doing it.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
So yeah.
That's the only, and that, I mean, that's a personal style thing. That's just one of the things that I think with, you know, especially with young designers and looking at stuff, they can see so much reference of people that really, again, do it excellently, but do, but have very clean styles. And then they just, and then they just go out and make a, you know, a monoweight illustration of a lighthouse.
Sure.
Or something, you know, or they do things that were kind of groundbreaking or cool or very different when the first couple of people did them, but they become tropes so fast because of, because everyone can see them.
Yeah. Well, they, they become so ubiquitous that you, you see them on Instagram and then you see them on, you know, and with Dribbble, they're posting them to every, you know, platform. So they get seen. Yeah.
And this also, I mean, but like an example of that is like, you know, Leonard and I did this series of posters for the Southern Soul and Song series. And so we did, like, you know, thinking about what is bluegrass and Southern and all this kind of stuff, we did, it's a series of trains. So if you put all the posters together, it's like six train cars. So there's the tanker and there's the engine and there's the coal car and there's the caboose and all this stuff. But in it, based on who the artist was, we would like write lyrics down, or in one of these things, because they had a song about building something, we found this old, you know, list of building materials from some old house that got built where like all of the nails cost 85 cents and all the lumber cost $5 or something. And we scanned that stuff in and we put it, layered it into that stuff. And though, even though you can't really see it, except that it just kind of plays as a texture. You know, we just kind of know it's in there.
Sure.
And that's kind of a little fruity and different, but I just kind of like that. I just kind of like that, you know, sort of gritty analog stuff.
Where,
and by that, I'm not saying just like distress something.
Yeah, no, there's an overabundance of that too.
Like you bought a hat.
It's pre-torn.
You know, where the brim's already fucked up on it.
Yeah.
It's just, and I mean, that's just a different thing.
I almost said that about jeans, but I realized I've bought jeans that are purposely distressed.
Purposely torn. Yeah.
Well, not bad, just a little scuffed.
Yeah. I mean, I think you get my point. And like I said, that's just a preference of mine.
Yeah.
Just to have, you know, some type of handworking in it or some type of, you know, I like humor or weird reference or something that kind of doesn't deserve to be there. And that's where I just think the clever stuff is. I mean, that's like I was saying, the people that can take, you know, super deep references, like, you know, Alvin Dekas.
Yeah.
So in the, Optimist, which is a badass restaurant in Atlanta, they got, I, maybe he had something to do with this. Maybe he didn't. Maybe it was just a designer. They have a bunch of keys hanging on, outside of the bathrooms. They don't go to anything. And you can take one if you want to. But on the keychains, they have the old diamond like keychain with like the number hot stamped into it. You know, which is just such a, for me, like moment in time type of thing that it's not, it's, that is not badass except that somebody noticed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, those were like a dime a dozen. I saw them all my life growing up with all my, you know, uncles in the middle of nowhere, but I saw one in this nice restaurant and just thought, oh my God, that is the tone. You know, that just nails the flavor.
It makes
sense.
Which
I think is the point of design.
Yeah. Well, it brings you back to that time, and it brings you back to that nostalgia. So if with the design you're able to create an emotion, then you're being effective.
Yeah, and it's like with any client, right? Mm-hmm. Any client says, I've got this thing, and I've got to make it attractive to these people at this time through this medium. You know, and if you can do that thing that is like, that resonates, you know, that's if you can do that all the time, I mean, you might get the jet.
You know? I don't know a lot of designers that have a private jet, but not a lot of designers have private jets, but yeah, we can all dream.
Yes.
So, well, we're getting kind of close to our times, but I want to know, you know, for the future of Where Stuart, what does it hold for you guys? That what do you hope to do? Are there any exciting projects you can talk about, that sort of thing?
You know, what's really exciting is like our downtown Augusta is blowing up. Mm-hmm. We bought the place next to us, so we're going to expand to there. You know, we started as me, basically, but I mean, the whole thing really started me and Daniel. Mm-hmm. I think we're 20 people now, and we've got another designer starting Monday who's coming from New Mexico.
Oh, wow.
Which is very, very cool. I think we're finally at a point, which we've said for years, like, oh, we can stop growing when we get to this number, that number. But I think we're finally, we've said this a lot, but at the point where we have all the people in place, mm-hmm. you know, that we can do all the things we do. And, you know, gotten past having, or in the final stages, I think, of really having to work out the process that it takes to deal with all that stuff to where we're really going to be able to do, super kind of focus on ourselves and just get, you know, better, more exciting clients and do more awesome work.
Gotcha.
You know, I mean, it's kind of hard to do. I mean, sometimes it feels tough to do your best work when you've got to do it really fast.
Sure.
Or, sure. You know, or things like that are going on. So I think we're getting into a good place.
Gotcha. Well, I got a question for you to follow up on that. Mm-hmm. When you're, you know, building up your team and deciding, you know, we've got everything that we need. At a certain point, you have to decide, this is what we can do. This is what we want to do. And this is what we know we're not going to do. How yes. did y'all make those decisions?
Well, you know, what we used to do is say yes to everything.
Sure.
Which, you know, I think a lot of people do. You say, yeah, and then you figure it out. And then we figured out those things that, you know, we didn't like. And so one of the things was if we were doing something that we didn't like to do, mm-hmm. We didn't do it very well, you know, and because of it, we would, you know, we wouldn't be super happy with the work and the client shouldn't have been super happy with what we were doing, mm-hmm. you know? And so we got to a point like about a year ago where we said, all right, here are the things that we're not going to do. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're the things that we don't like doing. So we just haven't been able to, you know, there have been things I don't like to do that we have people that like to do them mm-hmm. that work for us. And it's great because they're passionate about it and they do it. But being good and being able to focus on the stuff that you like to do results in good work.
Sure.
And if you're doing something you don't like to do, it sucks. So you have to make a choice on what you want to do.
Gotcha.
And that's kind of how we did it. Said we're not good at managing people's social media. So I don't care how bad someone wants us to do it. We will not be doing that on the daily or whatever it is, you know?
Sure. We'll help you find somebody, but that's not going to.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
We know some guys that do SEO work.
Yep.
You know? We are not going to say yes to that because no one will give a shit about it enough to do it, you know, to a point that anyone could be proud of, at least on our side.
Yeah. There's so many firms out there that are bigger firms that still don't say no to stuff. They still are trying to do everything so they don't have to sub out, or they don't have to. Yeah.
It's weird to watch it happen too, because there are so many people that would be like good at one thing, you know, and then they'll try to expand into other things that they're not good at.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, good Lord, like so much of the digital stuff, you can have an entire firm around.
Yeah.
You know, a singular digital focus.
Mm.
And it's so much easier for, I mean, here's what I think too, in terms of like design and stuff. I don't think that ideas are ever going to get marginalized, you know? And I think that design thinking and good design is never going to be automated. But there are going to be people that
no matter what design pickle says,
no matter what design pickle says, that's ain't going to happen. You know why? Because if you're good enough to work at Design Pickle, you know, if you can step to whoever in terms of design, then you're good enough
to work at a design center or guitar center.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe. I wonder if I was the best designer to ever not work at Guitar Center. I'm going to go with no, because I bet there are a ton of designers that have either worked at Guitar Center or did like I did and ran away.
You know, I don't know that anyone ever has said, I've got to go back to my car and get my wallet and then just drove off though.
It was a pivotal moment in my life, and it wasn't Guitar Center's fault. It was the dude that was in there who looked like he was on an audition for Blind Date. no shit. In the flame bowling shirt.
Yep.
Like Charlie Sheen's character or whatever that show was.
Or any dude that works at Guitar Center.
Like my two dads. Oh, yeah. It's bad.
Yeah, Two and a Half Men. Yeah.
Two and a Half Men, yes. Yeah.
My Two Dads was... See, now you're dating yourself.
I was a half of a man that day.
Yeah.
Jason, when I ran out of there.
I think you made the right decision.
I think so, too.
Well, real quickly, where can people find you online?
Find Ware Stewart rather than me. It's far more interesting, exciting. At Ware Stewart, WIERSTEWART, on basically everything. Dribble, Instagram. Our Instagram is fire. You can follow us on Facebook if you want, but our Instagram is where we get down the most. And of course, WareStewart.com.
Gotcha. And we'll link to all this in the show notes too.
So. Yeah, which we're currently remodeling. But you always have to.
The never-ending process of remodeling your own site.
That's right. Never-ending self-improvement.
Yeah. I'm very far behind on doing my site, so I've relied on just Dribbble and Instagram way too long.
It happens.
Yep.
You get a lot of tables.
Yeah. Well, Alex, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me tonight.
Absolutely. I have enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward. I think we're going to be bringing a pretty large crew down to Columbus.
Awesome.
And about a month from now. And I'm psyched that y'all didn't put it on Masters.
Yeah. First time in forever.
I know. Stop doing that, by the way.
I mean, it's not intentional.
I know, but I'm telling you to intentionally miss it from now on, because I love it. I know a lot of people love it. And, you know, we have some complications with it happening during Masters.
Yeah, like your kids are on spring break.
There's that. Yeah. There's all kinds of stuff that we can't talk about on this podcast that have to deal with the Masters, because it is what it is.
Yes, it is. Having lived in Augusta, I know.
Right.
All right, Alex.
Adult spring break.
Yeah, very much so. All right. I will see you in, a few weeks. Yeah.
Looking forward to it, man. We can have a beer in person.
Yes. There
maybe.
Probably won't be a Hooters glass, but.
Just maybe. I'll bring this little lovely lady down there with me.
Sounds good. All right. Go ahead and hug some necks.
All right, man. Thanks.
Not a problem.
You can find out more about Alex on Twitter at WhereStewart, and be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at CreativeSOPod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CreativeSouthGA, over at CreativeSouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Jack Prince is giving Creative South podcast listeners 15% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code SOUTH15OFF at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code Creative South. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at patreon.com/creativesouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.